I propose that we continue to slightly change the program, the quality of the interventions. Forces us to do so, and we must have time for some more elaborate discussion. And I would like to invite Kathy also to join us at the table and open the floor for questions, comments. John.
Professor Mayo, it was very striking when you spoke of the impressive cancer research being revealed, and then the next day, the usual football programs on the media, and no one knowing about it. And I wonder whether it would not be possible for the United Nations to have a television channel which could be used partly to build up a scientific mind in the general public across the world, to show science as a global effort in which all nations are cooperating, partly to show the cultural programs, partly to give an unbiased version of the news, and also, for example, to allow the Secretary General of the United Nations to give at New Year an address, much in the same way that the Queen of Denmark gives a New Year address, to build up the global consciousness of people today who, as you said, are, after all, screen-driven.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask a couple of people, perhaps, to raise their questions and make comments. Luke, loudly the box.
Thank you, sir. I'm the director of the institute here, and we are a small institute. And I'd like to address a question to you on the basis of the work you've done for the European Parliament. We're a small institute working in the social sciences. That means that we work in an interdisciplinary manner. We're also a small institute, and that means that if we want to do our research, we always face the problem of scale. Now, if you look at Europe at this moment, you see the development of quite a bit of disciplinary-oriented research, whereas many of the problems which present themselves need to be studied from a transdisciplinary perspective. That's one problem. The second problem is that if you look at new approaches in the sciences, you see that increasingly smaller institutions try to make the innovations, the bigger institutions being very often caught in a particular type of rationale. As a small institute, we face the problem of scale, because if you apply for the European Union funds, you always need to have a fairly large scale, otherwise the whole investment in it, in applying for those funds, is not available. So my question to you is, as the rapporteur of this very respected commission, have you engaged in considerations of scale and of interdisciplinary problems, as I've just exposed?
Thank you very much. Are there more contributions from the floor at this stage? I'd like to add one myself, actually, in an area that I feel covers a little bit both the interventions that we listened to. Both Federico Mayor and Kathy Nielsen addressed the issue of putting knowledge within reach of human beings. The question of publications was also brought up with Baggio yesterday, I believe it was. There are some interesting initiatives already going on that I'm aware of, particularly in the biomedical sciences. Many of the journals are scientific journals come out and are available to researchers, interested researchers, free of charge, both via the internet and in print. And some very interesting mechanisms have been developed in terms of how this is being funded. I believe that the European Molecular Biology Organization plays a role in that respect. In encouraging the researchers, whenever they design their research and go after funding, they include in the funding request the cost of publication. So cost of publication with the research with the researcher and the institution that supports the research, whereas then the knowledge is freely available to those who need it. I think it's a magnificent way of doing so. This is the one example that I'm aware of, but others may be aware of other ways of doing this. Obviously, publishing on the internet is another modality that we now know that has greatly advanced the accessibility of knowledge to those who have access to the technology. Again, we never solve the problem entirely, but we can make important headway. I just wanted to make that comment, and I'd like first Federico perhaps to comment further.
In the third question, I think that you have a very interesting contribution to make, because I have enjoyed very much what you have said. John Avery, concerning what you said, of course, all initiatives are very good if we could have a scientific channel in the United Nations will be very good. But the problem in this case is not a wonderful tool that this could represent, but the United Nations themselves, the United Nations itself. The first thing, and we are trying very hard this, I am working most of my time in cultural peace and the United Nations reform, because the United Nations has a wonderful charter that says we the people. You imagine what this means? Only this. They don't say we the state or with some, of course, one state as now happens. No, we the people. And this was, as you know, drafted. We were yesterday talking about it. This was drafted after the inspiration, direct influence of one United States president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Was Roosevelt that said, no, this is horrible and now we must be all. We the people, we have decided to avoid to our children the horror of the war. This is to the succeeding generations, they said. And I think that this is now what we might replace in the moment that, again, if sometimes they had this, again, the United Nations will have the moral authority to be in the environmental issues, in the political issues, in the territorial issues, in the cultural issues. Because we are having a process of uniformization. The media are being utilized really in order to, with very biased information very often, to create behaviors that are completely anti-scientific. I mean, many people are today reacting to all what they see, particularly in television, that is a very deformed transmission of reality. Therefore, the initiative will be very good, but until now at least, the authority of the United Nations being so low, you must, as I think, and Tofik is here and he can say, and sometimes what we were doing is to be very provocative at this moment, not because of UNESCO or the United Nations, because what you were saying was so provocative and was against what really they expected that you will say, that had a very important impact in the media, in the press, in the television, in the radio. Why? Because they do not expect it. And I remember that I said that the unexpected is our hope. Because if they expect that what you are going to say, they will not allow you to tell this. Because immediately you will have this immense pressure from all sides saying, no, do not say this. If you do unexpectedly, and you have a press conference and you communicate this, terrible. If you, for example, condemn the president of France at this moment because of the nuclear testing, Nobody could expect that the Director General of UNESCO will do this. And of course this had an immense impact. But for example, when I was trying to say in cultural issues that are so important, we were trying to recover the old films. As you know, the old films, because they are made on celluloid, in a given moment they just go down. And I was asked to make a world campaign on the recovery and conservation of all this fantastic, because this is history. You can be there, Victoriano Zapata, during the revolution. I mean, this is one film of this is more important than so many books of history. And we were talking, how can we attract people? We said this, we are going to do this. Not a single line in the newspapers. And then, what we did, I asked Catherine Deneuve. I said, look, and by the way, it's a wonder to be able to ask Catherine Deneuve something, but but afterwards, I asked her to be the personal ambassador for this. And I had a fantastic success. Why? Because you must not only utilize what we can say the UN discredited and forgotten very often system, but you must try to utilize this capacity of attractiveness of these personalities, of these people that are able really to make this a headline in very important newspapers. Therefore, the initiative is good. Now, for example, the European Union is trying to do something similar, to have a scientific education channel. Very good. This will be very good, and I think that they can benefit very much, for example, of the experience of your institute, of what you are doing. But in Spain, it has been with Latin America, Ispasar, and now we have the experience of Universia, that is the universities of Spain and the universities of Latin America doing joint programs. Some of them are good. I have not seen all, but I have seen some. They're good. It's a good starting, at least. But they must think in how to attract people, because otherwise the audience that they have is very restricted. Normal people. We are talking about the behavior of normal people, of the people, not of some people, of the people. They are not attracted by this kind of programs. Perhaps they must have this capacity of mixing these scientific programs with some very attractive young people also, personality, because if we want the teenagers, for example, be attracted by this and to be able to... one of the problems today, Mary Robinson said very recently, is indifference. We have young people that say, we are fed up with so many consumers. We are fed up. If you can attract them, should be one of these channels, but with a mixture of other kinds of programs that really attract them and convince them. And, well, therefore, anyhow, is of course, the media must be utilized, no doubt, for this and for many others, because they create a behavior. And what we are talking here is about awareness and commitment, involvement, and therefore of behavior. Now, Mr. Director, I must tell you that, yes, we have taken into account, and if you are afterwards you give me your mail, I will send you the report. Is in English and was presented, now is 1 year that I presented to the Danish authorities, because they were at this moment the chair of the European Union. And in the little group, European Research Council Expert Group, I had representatives of the kind of persons with the same preoccupation that you have expressed. And of course, you are absolutely right. We must be very careful, because there are some institutions that are so important and so well prepared to present, to submit projects, that Of course, they are so well done. They are so now with all this PowerPoint and all the things, they are so well done and they are so attractive that it's very difficult to say no. We must be careful. And as you have said, we have said a fund of 2 billion euros per year for excellence investigator-driven research. Therefore, we do not say for very big, no, no. We say excellence. And we add, provided that it is high-quality project, we prefer women and we prefer young people. Therefore, if possible, women. Provided that is high quality. But we think that we must promote the action, particularly at the director level, because we have now quite a lot of women as collaborators, but we must try to place the women also as directors of these endeavors. And therefore, it's not a matter of size, it's a matter of excellence. And the proposal, you will see, is completely independent of the European Union, and we have requested special mechanisms for administration, because the European Union is a labyrinth, it's impossible to get an euro. You need 2 years to make all this, and in science this is not feasible. Rita Colwell, precisely, when she addressed with me the parliament, she said, when I was the director of the National Science Foundation, I was able in 1 hour to decide on the priorities, for example, the SARS, the Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. And I was able to convene a meeting immediately for the day after of the 5 best laboratories in the United States working with coronavirus, that is the virus of the SARS. If we do not proceed like this, we have nothing to do. I mean, if we must wait 6 months for a meeting and then the SARS in the meantime, the priority is already finished. Therefore, I think sincerely that you will see in this report, is a very short report. It's 1.5 pages. Because this is another experience that I have now. It's very difficult to read reports, and they are so busy with many other things. I told the Minister of Research and Technology of Denmark. I told him, yes, I accept. In 1 year time, you will have the report. The report will have 1.5 pages. And he was very happy, because in this way he was able to read it and also to recommend the parliament to read it. Of course, I have some annex to give in explanations for. But you will see that we are, at this respect, very precise, very clear-cut on what you have said. What we want is quality. And the quality does not depend on the size. And we cannot benefit always the size, because finally what we are doing is to have this mega centers in the world that are exactly the opposite that we want to promote. We want to promote this kind of interdisciplinary, very rooted with the local programs, with the global vision at this level. And for the third part of the question, that of Jan, I think that you are better placed than me to answer.
Regarding accessibility of knowledge, I feel that first of all, most important thing is to have the intention. A question is so, if we have that intention, and we truly have that intention to open conversations, that will drive us, and it will drive not only our choices, our reflections on how we participate in conversations that are closed, but it will also technology will also follow. You know, we don't really have to think, sit here and figure out what technologies. I mean, you and I, at least, the computer scientists, maybe. Luckily, we have those kind of people here. I don't know how that happened, and I think it's fantastic. And so that's another conversation to keep open. Mm-hmm. To keep people who develop these things involved in those conversations. wanted to indicate a small example of how I think this could happen is one of the projects that I'm working on is with physicists in KEK in Japan, and we'll be developing a digital archive of oral histories. So I think that if we start thinking of these archives as not so much as just repositories of knowledge that historians in the future will look at, which it is, and it's very valuable for those purposes, but also as a vehicle for conversation so that we open question spaces for young people and policymakers and scientists of different disciplines to talk with each other, that these kinds of conversations, I think, will be the, you know, we have a commitment to those things, I think it will flow.
Jan, I would like to add that if you so wish, I can also send you the plan of the European Union for science and society. Because one part is accessibility, what you have said, is what I have enjoyed very much, accessibility of the citizens of the European area to knowledge in a kind that is not oversimplified, but is accessible and understandable. There is one plan that was published at the end of the year 2002 that is called the Plan of Action of the European Union on Science and Society. It has a very big part is precisely related with this kind of attention to the little enterprises also, to the PYMEs, no? To the medium and little size enterprises, to the little groups, to the groups of humanities, not only thinking in chemistry, and the very important part is on the media, how to have some good contacts with the media, even having some scientific journalism updated, permanently updated, and being a part of our conversations. There is also, as you have mentioned, the European Molecular Biology Organization has a very good group on scientific information. And also the Federation of European Biochemical Societies. I think that they are very good, not because I'm the chairperson, but because I think that they have persons from so many years that have been working on this issue, that they are also well trained to see what are the ways by which the advances, particularly in this case in molecular biology, can be transmitted. And therefore, this could be one part of the materials that you have at this very concrete matter. I will be able to facilitate this to you.
I just wanted to suggest that I've sort of taken on a little personal action point on this point, which is I think that I'd like to look into possibilities for making these online journals, so finding funding for making online journals available to independent and scholars and institutions that don't have that. There might be a way that we could pool for resources to convince us, publishers to create some sort of access portal for it. And so if people have ideas specifically about organizations that could support that or vehicles for advancing that, I would love to talk.
There's in fact a need for knowledge about what is already available. Everyone knows a little bit and no one knows everything. And the search at a meta level, we could collect some information about it and make it available to people. A portal, not so much of access, but rather of knowledge about. There are five more requests of people who wanted to contribute. We are actually, it's 10:30 now, it's the hour of coffee break, but I propose we penetrate a little bit into the coffee break without really sacrificing it, but I request you to be brief. I have first Roy McNeely.
Well, I thank you for this brilliant and moving introduction to the work of UNESCO. I've always been a great admirer of UNESCO initiatives. We need help. We are all scientists working at, we're producers working at ground level. And we need to make our productions known, we need to get from the people who produce them. I think when you mention support for research, you should put on an equal footing support for the learner-teacher interaction. This is where things begin.
Support for the learner-teacher interaction, that's what you said, right?
Yes, which we can provide so easily these days through the but a lot of work is being done, the MIT project and so on, at a much higher level. I think we need to get it to the children.
Right. Thank you. Muriel.
Yes, first of all, I wanted to thank Kathy, because I think she, well, you already thanked her, but I want to thank her personally also because she did a very wonderful job of putting together a lot of things that we discussed tonight today. And I think it was a very, very stimulating way to start the ending of this meeting and the beginning of lots of other things. I know the theme of today's session is actually to start building the world of tomorrow, if I remember correctly. I don't have my program with me, but that's what I kept in mind. And I have been part of a group during this meeting, as most of you know, that is looking at HIV/AIDS in the scientific mind. And we have struggled a lot during our discussions in a very productive way with the desire to build that world of tomorrow and the acknowledgement that 20 years on, we feel that maybe we have definitely not gotten as far as we would have wanted to. And in that context, we kept on coming back to the role that education has to play, that learning has to play in addressing HIV/AIDS and in making the threat of the disease and the reality of the disease manageable. One of the things that we didn't discuss but that I personally have been thinking about a lot is the tension that exists, and I would like to ask you about that, how you think about that, between the concept of education for all, it's still a concept because it's not a reality, and our desire to build that world of tomorrow. There is a tension there for me, and the tension exists not because the principle is not fantastic, because it is, and it is something that we should all strive for, but in reality what it seems to have implied in many cases is that we're doing education on a shoestring. And we are applying a very simplistic formula to something that is incredibly complex. The way education is being delivered today and the way children are being integrated into schools, in my experience and opinion, does not prepare them for life. It does not prepare them for dealing with the realities that they face. One of those threats is HIV/AIDS, but there are many others. I wonder how you think about that tension. And we discussed in our group that there are probably some preconditions that need to exist in order to be able to build that scientific, to build a scientific mind. One of the things that we discussed abundantly and was talked about yesterday was the whole issue of trust. That was one of the preconditions that we felt that existed. In order to be able to develop interventions at community level, there has to be true trust. And there has to be an understanding of the kind of barriers that come up when you try to change one thing within a community, but there might be others. So I think that that is something that I would like to throw out in the group and ask you directly. Do you see this as a tension, and if you do, what do you think that the implications of this are?
Okay. That's it. Thank you. Ron? Ron Burnett.
Sir, I don't want to sort of go off for a question, but I do want to raise an issue that really, because most of my research for the last 35 years is in the mass media, and both in production research and teaching, and the continual theme that always comes out in what I would describe as meetings of this sort, where the desire is really to communicate, find the modes of communication to invigorate the relationship between people, among people, to develop rigor and analysis is a very strange tautology. And I would very like to caution you against that tautology, because everything in the evidence actually shows that tautology to be incorrect, which is that the media actually represents what people think. I mean, the most fundamental error is the error that media themselves generate, which is they generate a sense of their own power, make that tautology look legitimate, and then researchers spend, there are many UNESCO researchers over the years that have fulfilled the terms of that tautology. But if you take a hard look at the field, you look at the grassroots, you look at what's happening among people, and you mention electronic games and other forms of media expression, and if you do the rigorous analysis of communities, what you discover is that the media do not represent what people think. And so if one points out that the media say this, that says very little about what people do with what they think and what they receive and what they watch. So that tautology is a dangerous one from an analytical point of view because it cuts off precisely the debate that we need to have about what do people do with this information. And they do much more than we expect.
Thank you. Ralph Searing, Fairbizon, Mozambique.
I would like to introduce the notion of power into what you have been saying, because if you say that the knowledge should be put at reach of people, of course we all agree, but how does that work in practice? If I'm thinking of the example you gave for the old man from northern Namibia who saw the light that was produced by solar energy, I presume that if you would stay in that village a longer time, you would see this solar energy plant, which produces the light and the electricity for the vaccines to be there. At a certain point in time, they will have to place a military guard around this solar energy plant, because I have seen in northeastern Namibia the solar energy constructions supplying the water pump in an area where water is desperately needed. But the people, I don't know, they destroyed it. They destroyed it perhaps because they wanted to look what's behind it, because they wanted to look what it is, where it comes from. Or they destroyed it because it came from an institution which they had the experience with, that that institution would be part of a regime which oppressed them. So I think we cannot transfer or transmit knowledge outside this context of the power that is coming with it. And so how can we introduce the light into that village in a way that people can understand what's going on, that they can handle it themselves, and that they then can make it their own? And that is a learning process which I do not yet know how that has to be organized, because the institutions which do it now many times are part of something which people consider their enemies.
Thank you, Ron. Master Tarfi, UNESCO Delhi.
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. Actually, I think one of the main reasons that we are discussing this important initiative is that we see that building the scientific mind or scientific mind points to do for dissertation in this world for the future, to do something for the future. But those who are supposed to be the main player, as you rightly said, are, let us take the United Nations, for example. They are so weak, in a way that nothing could be done, actually. And I'm a witness myself when I joined the UNESCO. I was representing my country to UNESCO at the time, 1994, and I saw you as a director general fighting for new ideas, new initiatives, like the culture of peace. And I said, my goodness, this man is fighting alone, but you never give up. And after some long years, they start to grasp your idea, and I remember the Germany granted some $1 million for that, and now it is a big success. But now there is a lack of initiatives in the world. As you rightly said, people either indifferent, or they fed up, or they are under pressure, or so I want, of course, we will have such initiatives, but I want you to tell us which mechanisms would be different now if there is a lack of initiatives. The United Nations look at the scientists themselves. Sometimes they get together to sign a protest against such a situation. Nobody cares. Could be just one line in the newspaper, or nobody even will care about it. So with this circumstance, under these conditions, with your vision, which mechanisms could be taken? I'm not saying emissions, because no emissions. Which mechanisms could be followed just to try to realize or materialize this idea of having scientific minds among parliamentarians, the government people, the United Nations people? This really needs some new inventions, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. And in the interest of time, Federico Maroy, a brief rejoinder of all those complex issues that you raised.
Well, in fact, they've been very interesting questions that are not easy to answer. I have been very interested in this question concerning the producers at the root level and how to be known. At this respect, this learner-teacher interaction, I think that is a part of the what we can say present preoccupations, because the experience of people is our richness. So many problems cannot be solved because we do not ask those that are working so many years in this. How can we really build a scientific mind? Asking to those that are more than 20 years that are working on this every day in their life. We have been this divorce between finally the decision making and the grassroots workers on the different matters has been terrible. I can tell you, even if I am a little long, but not very much, to take you some anecdotes at this respect, because I think that are extremely important. I remember when I was precisely the Director General of UNESCO at the beginning, that I decided to know well Africa. Because we are always saying things about Africa that are completely wrong. We are talking about corruption, we are talking about, and when we go there, we realize that there are more corruptors than corrupted. And there are many things that you must know well. Well, I arrived, this was only 3 or 4 months after being Director General, to Burkina Faso. And I always remember that I went to see one new center close to Ouagadougou, that is the capital of Burkina. And you can imagine, I went with the president, the vice president, the minister of education, the minister of culture, all the back cars there. We arrived there and we started talking about education in Africa. And we did our best. I must tell you, I had a group of friends in UNESCO that were preparing for me elements for my speech. And also the president did very good. And I realized that the director of this center was a wonderful woman of around 50, 52 years, and she was smiling in such a way that I was thinking, she's smiling because she's satisfied, or is a lot of irony in her smile, in her smile. Well, at the end was very clear, was irony, was not satisfaction, because she was looking at us, and she told me, I appreciate what you have said and what the president has said, but you really think that UNESCO knows better than we know how to teach in Africa? You consider that you from Paris, you can come here as always UNESCO, UNICEF, the NGOs arrive here and give us advice? You have never requested our views? Then you do not think sincerely that the first thing you should do is to come here and to ask those that are the educators of Africa, how can you support us? I was so convinced immediately by this woman that I told her, Madam, you have changed all the UNESCO design of education for the future. And she looked at me with the same irony, saying, well, this will be lesser than this. When I arrived to Paris, I convened a meeting of all the director related with the educational sector. And I told her, do you have the UNESCO manual for education? She said, yes, but do not throw it to the basket. No, because this is a part of the history. You put in the library. And from now on, UNESCO will be l'UNESCO de l'écoute, will be the UNESCO that is permanently listening what they must tell us. And I requested another very distinguished woman. Today, she is the wife of Nelson Mandela. I requested Graça Machel, to whom I knew from Mozambique many years ago, when she was married with Samora Machel, and then she became the Minister of Education and Culture. She's a very, very high personality woman, and I asked her, please, this comes from an African woman. We would like to chair, from now on, the educational program called Audience Africa, precisely. This is to tell you that I fully agree that what we must know is the experience of the people. The second anecdote is that when I was Minister of Education and Science in Spain, after 3 weeks I was told that by my collaborators that, Minister, this is impossible. Of course, if the things are easier, they will be already solved. I mean, most of the things that we must deal with are things that are impossible in principle. By the way, Jacques-Yves Cousteau, that was a very good friend of mine many years, he was already very old, and sometimes he was slippery, you know. And I remember one meeting in which we were talking in UNESCO many things, and he was really apparently sleeping. And suddenly, some of them said, this is impossible. And then he said, if this is impossible, I am interested in it. I mean, if it is not impossible, then there are many other people that could solve the problem. Well, then when I was told that, Minister, this is impossible, I asked them, do you have already had a rapid but in-depth contact with the teachers of this level? No. Then, they know, they have the experience. The experience is our great treasure. And we must try to take and to benefit from this experience. By the way, concerning this, UNESCO precisely has made in this bulletin education today, and they say education of science in danger. And I think that some of your questions concerning this relation at the grassroots level between learners and teachers is addressed here. Well, in fact, the education for all, this question, I must tell you that this is the matter. We are always talking about education from the teaching. But you have said a very important matter. You have said learning. What really matters is from now on to take more into account the learning than the teaching. Because we judge the quality of education in terms of learning, not in terms of teaching. And always we have been talking about the teachers and about the problems of education from the teacher's optics. And we must now to put ourselves in the learning side. If I said education for all, what's the reaction to the great powers? UNESCO was doing a lot of programs to build schools in the developing world. And when I arrived, I said, I do not see this in the UNESCO's constitution. In the UNESCO's constitution, it is said that we must build peace in the minds of men. Then, where is the school? The building of a school. The building of a school is the responsibility of the government. And they must grasp in their budget in order to fulfill a human right that is essential. And not to ask for for loans, because there is no support, as you know, except some countries, as Netherlands, by the way, and Denmark, and the Nordics in general, they are supportive. But it has been a disaster, the support of the other countries. A disaster. They have substituted the support, the aid, the grants, by loans in a draconian conditions. You must privatize, you must streamline the administration, you must make infrastructure, that of course is done by those that give you the loan. Therefore, I thought that to build peace, I should not build schools. I should recommend the governments to do this. And what we did is to say education for all. And we convened with UNICEF and UNDP the first well meeting on education. That was education for all throughout life. Of course, I had an immense reaction from the, let us say, big countries against this. Because they say literacy and basic education. But Julius Nyerere, that was a wonderful and very experienced, he was the Mualima, he was a teacher himself. He went one day to UNESCO, I invited him to say, tell here what you have told me in Geneva. And he said, we are fed up with basic education. Because with basic education we are always colonial. You are always those that have education, the other levels, and we are always only limited to be at the lowest level and to be finally a colonized country, and we have not our... We want education. Education for all throughout life. And this means what I think that is based on this trust to the teachers, to the local teachers, to this immense treasure that we have, and also the capacity to encourage people to be in all the levels of education and not only at the simple level. And finally, media does not represent the people thinking. I have the hope that this century will be the century of people. Until now, if you look at the history, people has never been in the scenario. In the scenario we have the political power, the economic power, the religious power, the technological power, the scientific power, the mediatic power now, an immense power. But where is the people in the history? Sometimes they appear violently, normally, and they disappear immediately because the muscle of the governments are normally stronger than the muscles of the people. Now I think that we have the technology to become really the power. And we have the possibility of becoming a real democracy. Democracy also at the worldwide level. What we have at this moment, we have an immense contradiction. We have sometimes acceptable democracies at the local level. But what we have at the supranational level? We have not any kind of frame of legal frame, of ethical frame. We have not the United Nations because they are not have no power. What we have? We have very big corporations, they do what they like, complete impunity. We have, instead of values to guide us, we have the market. I mean, there is an immense contradiction. We have what we can say a plutocracy at the supranational level, when we have sometimes acceptable democracies at the national level. I think that this question is extremely relevant. What can we do in order that finally it's the people that counts? The people to count, this is democracy. And normally we are counted, that is different. We are not taken into account, but we are counted. 1, 2, 3, favor. 1, 2, 3, 4, against. But we are not taken into account, and this is democracy. There are so many questions, but I think that I must stop here.
I think so.
I think so, because we are 25 minutes to the coffee break, and the terrific technology of thermal bottles, I think, allows the coffee still to be drinkable at this stage. But if you go on much longer, you won't. And a coffee break is a very important space for discussion.
Only allow me to add one thing. I would like in the publication some of the paintings of Jasmina. Let me see. Some of these paintings, I suggest that you give me the possibility of publishing them. Where are? Look. Look what a wonder.
That's part of the proceedings.
Eh? Yeah, okay. You accept that this is a part of the proceedings to be published? Just a minute. You will do it.
Very good. Before we go to the coffee break, I'd like to end with one other anecdote, a very short one. This very much characterizes the relationship I had with Federica Maiore at the time that I was working with UNESCO, and we were starting an effort called Learning Without Frontiers.
Yeah.
Post-education without frontiers, Learning Without Frontiers, and I took it very seriously, and was invited to a meeting in the Director General's office with about 20 other people, I think, and they were all nicely listening to what Federico was developing as his vision of how it should be in Africa, every human being able to learn, and we would all have access to internet and things like that. And so then he did a round of all the various people present, and, well, as this, after all, it's the Director General of UNESCO, so say yes, sir, and yes, sir, yes, sir, and then, great support, and that was the last one to be asked, and being of Dutch extraction, and Federico once called me very Dutch. I'm used to speak my mind, so I said, I don't think this can be done. I've lived and worked in Africa for a long time, and I think you're dreaming. And he gave a response that I've never forgotten. He said, it's the task of the Director General of UNESCO to dream. The importance of vision, I think, underlies also the work that you're doing today. If we are looking at a world of tomorrow, we must dream, but dream in a very realistic sense. And that's what I have greatly appreciated always since in Federica Maiore, and I'm very glad that he is with us, not only today physically, but we will continue that collaboration between our institutes, between the scientific mind, and between the culture of peace. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.